make me feel dizzy. Taxi light shines so bright, but I don't.
Ray Davis has been one of the most distinctive voices in popular music for over 40 years now. As a member of the Kinks and then as a solo artist, he's written and performed songs that have become a part of the popular culture. Next week, on Thursday and Friday, he'll be performing some of his best songs in a surprising fashion, backed by a professional choir. It's part of a new project he's working on called the Kinks Choral Collection. The CD is available now on Decca Records, and I'm very pleased that it has brought Ray Davis back to this show. We just heard Waterloo Sunset from it. Mm. And can you clear something up, the pronunciation of your last name?
Think of it as Viz, like V-I-Z. Don't worry about
Davis.
Davis, yeah.
Now, I've been saying Davis, and all of these people have been telling me, no, it's Ray Davies. You don't know anything about popular music.
Roy Davies.
Ray Davies. Yeah. Well, whatever. Anyway, how did you come up with the idea of incorporating a choir into rock songs?
It's a long journey. I was commissioned to write a choral piece about 10 years ago for a festival in England called the Norwich Norfolk Arts Festival. And they wanted all new work, and it was with the Britain Symphonia. So it was a big undertaking. And most people take 2 years to write these things. I had to write in 3 months. So they knew I was an idiot who would take on the challenge. And I finished it and used an 80-piece strong choir. It was really, it worked. I called it a first draft because you can't finish that thing in 3 months. Then 2 years ago, I had a new album out, and the record company put me on a thing called the Electric Proms, not like the Promenade Concerts. It was a pop version of the Proms. And they asked, it was on TV and radio, and they asked me to work with a guest, you know, collaborate with somebody. And I thought of the choir, and I got the choir in, and we worked on 5 or 6 songs, and it was a tremendous success. It was, the highlight of the season. Then the record company stepped in and said, record it.
Well, I'm sure that when you were writing these songs, like Wondrous, like the one we just heard, that you weren't thinking choir in the background.
Well, that song, Waterloo Sunset, that had backing vocals, I never think of backing vocals as being a choir.
But you had the other members of the Kinks.
I had the other members of the Kinks. There was a girl, my then wife, was singing, and with my brother and the bass player, and double track. They sound quite, quite big. And Waterloo Sunset is a direct copy of that. It's not typical of the whole record. The rest of the record is more adventurous than that.
Is it hard working with a choir? Because you're working with band members or session players, and you probably just have to give them a few words of instruction, and they pretty much get it.
Oh, I usually tell musicians nothing. I mean, why give them a clue?
Don't give them any help.
No help whatsoever. But with the choir, it was different. It was a learning curve for me because I'd done this piece 10 years ago, and I had a slight insight into the way they work. The first thing is that I didn't want it to be too pretentious, too complicated. And on the other side, I didn't want it to be too simplistic. So I would sit down with some ideas with the choir master and the arranger, vocal arranger. And I'd give them my ideas, and we'd discuss whether it's possible or not, and the different dynamics we wanted to achieve. Then we worked on a sketch for the choir parts. Then I rehearsed it with the band that I was using. And we put the two together, recorded it on separate occasions. But we had all the parts, the dynamics. And that's the most important difference to making a normal rock record. The dynamics are usually done afterwards, post-recording in the studio. And this time we had to say, oh, the choir's going to be really quiet. Here's a band. Extra care and attention taking taken in the recording of the backtracks.
So you wrote, you recorded them almost as though it were a live performance.
Exactly. We couldn't find a studio big enough. If I'd had an orchestra, we could have found a fairly big EMI, or, you know, there's some good studios in London. But with a rock band, with rock musicians, it's just not the space. So we did it in different spaces.
Well, you normally record in your own little studio, don't you? All you need is enough space to get separation between the different instruments.
We have a good live room in London. But it's I wanted to get an ambience to this sound. I wanted to give the impression it was recorded in the same place, so it's slightly more care taken on the recording.
Now, choruses and choirs have been used in the past, but like Foreigner, I remember, did a famous record with it, and many others where there's a kind of a gospel sound, but you weren't looking for that here either.
No, the choir sound, this isn't definitely not a gospel choir. They're a suburban choir in North London near where I grew up.
It's called Crouch End Festival Chorus. I know I lived in London. I never heard of Crouch End.
No, it's a best-kept secret in London. It's they do a lot of Elgar. They do big concerts, incorporate with other build. You know, they have 150 people to draw on, so they've got a quite large choir. I use 65 of them on this record.
65 voices, that's an awful lot, too. And you have their background has not been with rock music.
No.
Do you face the same problems you do sometimes when you work with players out of symphony orchestras? They have to make certain adjustments?
Yeah, I've just done another project in London using classical string sections, and it is different. But the good players, you know, players play what you want, and they are very sort of, there's an empathy there. That's the important thing. They were very good with me because there's a sense of humor in a lot of things I do. And I didn't want them to think that I was sort of taking advantage of them. And that, so there's a good humor rapport built up between myself and the choir members.
Is there a temptation to use the choir as a sort of wall of sound, a la Phil Spector?
Yeah, I'd love to. I love that sound. It's a wall of sound. I've used it. Interestingly enough, I achieved some of that in post-production because it was all recorded and I layered it a bit and did some overlapping in post-production. But generally speaking, it's as written and all the parts are, for the most part, on the record are as we arrange them.
And you can write arrangements? Or you are one of those, the rare... what word do I want? I'll say rock musician.
Yeah.
Who actually can sit down and write out various musical parts?
I can. I mean, you really got me our first hit. I didn't have a tape recorder at home, and that was notated. And it's a very simple song, but it's very simplistic, but it doesn't take much to write a good top line. And I did some orchestration in my 20s, mm-hmm. till my teacher told me to stop because it was destroying my natural instinct.
Your natural instinct to what?
My innocence. thinking about what I was doing too much. And there is an element of that. You know, with rock music, it is free-spirited. And music, more conventional music, is more, what's the word? I don't want to put restrained, but there are lots of rules.
Well, rock music keeps on going in pendulum swings. So you have every so often you have a return to basics.
Sure.
And then you wind up with big choirs and symphony orchestras. And then somebody says, oh, we're going too far. And you go back to basics again.
Yeah. I wasn't classically trained. I took piano lessons and guitar lessons. But I wanted to get to blues and folk music as soon as possible.
So what do you do now? Do you write things down or do you compose directly on an instrument?
One of my ambitions is to write without any instrument. I still want to achieve that, so I just get my ideas down.
Because there is a difference in sound when people compose on the guitar when they compose on piano.
Yeah, there is. Oddly enough, though, all the guitar, Kinks guitar, we've got two on this record, All Day and All of the Night, and You Really Got Me. They're great guitar riffs. Was played by my brother, but they were written on the piano. And that surprises a lot of people.
It surprises me.
Yeah.
So the riffs were written out? They weren't just something that were developed in the studio?
The melody lines were written out, and the riffs... No, the riffs were defined right from the beginning. The riffs were first. Yeah, the rest was an offshoot.
My guest is Ray Davis, whose latest recording is the Kinks Choral Collection. It's just been released on Decca, and he will be performing with the Desoff Chamber Choir at Town Hall on West 23rd Street. That's between 6th and Broadway on the 19th and 20th, a week from Thursday and Friday. You can get ticket information on that on our show page at WNYC.org. We'll take a little break and we'll come back with more right after this.
Big sky, look down on all the people looking up at the big sky. Everybody's pushing one another around. Big Sky feels sad when he sees the children scream and cry. But the Big Sky are too big to let it get him down. Big Sky too big to cry. Big Sky too high to
We're back with Ray Davis. His latest recording is the Kinks Choral Collection on Decca, and he'll also be performing with the Desoff Chamber Choir at Town Hall on the 19th and 20th of this month, a week from Thursday and Friday. If you want more information about that, you can go to our show page at WNYC.org. I was talking earlier with Thomas Hampson about putting lyrics to music, and in this case, composers who take a poem and put it to music. I don't know whether you start off with a musical idea or a lyrical idea, but how does that work for you?
How does it work? I remember a songwriter called Sammy Kahn I saw an interview, and he said people always ask me this question.
Which comes first, the words or the music?
And he said the phone calls. I think two come together. I think that I've written down lyrics. I did a song years ago, what was it? Dedicated Follower of Fashion, which was a satirical song. And I was very angry when I wrote it. And I had all this anger inside me. And I got to an old fashioned typewriter and I typed out all the venom. And it turned out to be a comedy song. But I didn't change one word when I wrote the lyrics to it, when I wrote the melody to it, because the lyrics seemed to have a driving force.
Well, a song like Lola, where there's such a perfect marriage of the lo-lo-lo-lo, the melody with the lyric, it's hard to imagine which could have come first.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what came first there. The incident, which is based on a true incident. I write sort of lots of documentary type songs in a club in Paris that we won't really go into much here, but the Lola Lola was very simple. I got to the chorus and I had a 2-year-old daughter at the time, and I sang something that she could sing, so that's how the chorus came about. Elo Ele Lola. So I think once a lyric is strong, and as opposed to poetry, I think lyrics have their own life, and create their own destiny.
Well, he was talking about determining the rhythm, or the rhythm of the music, I guess, determining how the poetry is heard.
Oh, sure. There's a wonderful...
Well, you're doing everything 4-4, aren't you?
4-4 to a degree. I've just done a song, although in English folk songs we mix up 2-4 and 6-8 and 4-4. I sing the way I speak, and sometimes I speak with pause, odd pauses here and there.
You also draw upon music hall traditions,
sure,
which is something that distinguishes British rock from American rock.
I think so. Although,
I mean, I always hear my old man said, "Follow the van." Every time I hear some of the old '60s English rock groups,
yeah, well, that's not very nice to say that.
I'm sorry, oh,
but you could say that Frank Zappa, one of my was a friend and a hero of mine, was pure vaudeville. Mm-hmm. A lot of his music, you know, that the album "We're in It for the Money," "What's There to Live For," "Who Needs the Peace Corps," is definitely
Brown music. Shoes Don't Make It.
Yeah, that's pure vaudeville. So it goes both sides. But you had a vaudeville tradition here, so it works both ways. But I know what you mean. Some English bands like the Bonzo Dog Doodah Band were mm-hmm. pure music hall.
When you were thinking of which songs of yours, because you've written quite a few, that would work well with a choir, how did you determine that?
With a bit of difficulty, because obviously the commissioning A&R person in London who commissioned the record wanted as many hits as possible.
But you can't leave out Lola. Even
well, we did. We did leave Lola out, and we left a few out. And I wanted to show, we put "You Really Got Me All Down of the Night" and others on it, but I wanted it to show some of the breadth of the music. And there is a folk tradition, in English folk tradition, in some of my music that I'm not really aware of. I don't pretend to know too much about it. So we did some songs on this record, a selection of songs from an album called the Village Green Preservation Society, mm-hmm. which is very lyrical. And I defy anyone to pigeonhole that song. It's a very strange, and some of the lyrics, "God bless strawberry jam, china cups and virginity." I can sing it, but I can't say it. And it's so that was a challenge with the choir, and they pulled it off really well.
Well, you can sing it because you can always draw out certain words when you're singing it, but if you draw them out when you're saying it, and virgin, you know, whatever.
Virginity.
Yeah, it sounds kind of weird.
It sounds weird, but the way I sing it the way it's written. That's something, sometimes I do that, which is, some people get annoyed with me for. The choir on this record to sing it, it sounds like Gilbert and Sullivan, the way they sing it. And that's good, and that's humor. There's humor on this record, a lot of it.
Well, there's humor in all of the music, the songs you wrote over the years.
Yeah.
When the Kinks were starting out, rock music was basically guitar, bass, and drums. Mm. If you wanted to get fancy, maybe you'd add a harmonica or a piano. But even back in the 60s, your arrangements included things like an accordion in "A Sunny Afternoon," a trombone solo in "Dead End Street." Mm. So you were already thinking of breaking out of that box?
Yeah, and there was a wonderful instrument called the mellotron that we use quite a lot, especially on Village Green. It's one that you could get flutes, orchestras. I love drawing on different sounds. I'm very inspired by different sounds.
But then when you went on tour, it must have been hard to duplicate that, because generally you're just going to do the pared down group.
Yeah. Just while we're on, I'm playing with the Desov choir, but also I've got my 5-piece band with me. Mm-hmm. And that's been an interesting, watching the band, who are basically rock musicians, how they've evolved since they made this record and how they reacted. And they're very sensitive guys, and they came with my ideas and took them on board. But
a drummer especially has to adjust when he's working with a 65 voice choir.
Yeah, I mean, the drummer on lots of the record, Toby Barron, was very good at that. But he had some training, and so the dynamics of the drums are crucial with this sort of record.
Were you hearing those arrangements when you were writing the songs?
I hate to say it, but yes, I was hearing, when I wrote "Waterloo Sunset," I was definitely hearing voices in my head.
So, but that must have been frustrating, forgetting the fact that you were going crazy at the time. It must have been frustrating that you couldn't have done some of those things.
No. And at the time, I was working with, you know, old quarter-inch tape, old-fashioned reel-to-reel, and I was doing vocals and reversing the tape, so it's all coming back with different sounds. And I loop lots of tapes, not on that particular song, but other songs around that time.
And then when you went solo, you could have done any kind of configuration you wanted, couldn't you? Because you're no longer...
I could have done...
You wound up mostly guitar, piano.
Yeah, yeah. Going back to your accordion, my keyboard players do tend to go through emotional changes when they're with me. And I've had a series of... I had one really well... classical guy playing on keyboards, and he found it really hard to adopt to the accordion and the little sound effects. But generally speaking, it's basically the keyboard is a very versatile instrument.
Now, you mentioned earlier that some of the songs were autobiographical, but I've always thought of you as being kind of like Randy Newman in that you put yourself into the heads of other people when you were writing songs and not always writing things where I could say, oh, gee, Ray Davies was having that experience.
I write in character, and I think that confuses people sometimes. There's a song called Celluloid Heroes. Everybody thinks, because I write, some of it happened to me, but I get myself into the song. But generally speaking, it's observations of other people and their lives. Yeah.
So in a way, that's the same sort of thing that a poet would do.
I suppose so. But there's some poets who write purely from their own personal experience.
Is this something that you've always... Is this come out of the fact that you also have written some fiction?
My life is fiction. I mean, reality to me blurs. There's a blurry line between fiction and reality. I think so. That's interesting. You know, I don't teach songwriting, but I've done songwriting courses for new writers and older writers about 18, 20 years now.
But you've also written for the printed page. Waterloo Sunset was also the name of a short story collection. Then you wrote X-Ray, which you called an unauthorized autobiography.
Yeah, because I didn't know the truth. But the first thing I say to a new writer is, I can't teach you how to do this. I think that's... there are some ground rules, but really anything goes. And anything that gets ideas out is very important.
Why do you think your music seems to still have a life after a life after a life? We have all these commercials. Hewlett Packard used picture book in a commercial for computer printers. Yeah. Nissan used Van Halen's cover of You Really Got Me a couple of weeks ago. Contestants used Sunny Afternoon in a routine on ABC TV's Dancing with the Stars. And Kink's music is being featured prominently in the new movie Pirate Radio.
Really? I don't know. It's
hope you paid for all of that.
So, well, I'll check up on it when I leave here. I'm not sure. The picture book thing was what they say a no-brainer. It was a smart idea because it was so obvious. I really am pleasantly surprised when people pick an unknown song to use in those things, because it's easy to go for things like Lola and Waterloo Sunset.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being with us. I've been talking with Ray Davies, whose latest record is the Kinks Choral Collection out on Decca. He'll be performing with his new group and the Desoff Chamber Choir at Town Hall, 123 West 43rd Street, between 6th and Broadway on November 19th and the 20th. That's a week from Tuesday and Wednesday. Also backed by, and when you were at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, you were backed by Metallica. So you're all over the place, Ray.
I know. I am actually all over the place.
Was that fun playing with Metallica?
It was great. And they have a great, you know, the good thing about bands is they have their own world and they have their own dynamic. And they were really good guys. They did their homework and it was a pleasant experience. Loud, but pleasant.
If you want more ticket information, you can go to our show page at WNYC.org. On tomorrow's show, Time Magazine's Joe Klein on Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's recent diplomatic visits to the Middle East, Russia, and elsewhere. And then cultural critic David Lehman looks into the Jewish origins of much of the American songbook, from jazz standards to show tunes and iconic love songs. Also, Camilla Shamsie on Burke Shadows, her new novel, plus Sir Harold Evans on his life in journalism and how he developed his unique repertorial voice. The Leonard Lopate Show is produced by Blakeney Schick, Stephen Valentino, and Julia Corcoran. Melissa Egan is the executive producer. We had help today from Angela Sheldon, Josh Bell, and Stephanie Bernhardt. Debbie Fountain was at the audio controls. I'm Leonard Lopate, your host. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you tomorrow.